Welcome to Inside New Mexico. I'm Derek Underhill, and each week at this time, I have a conversation with the chairman of the Republican Party of New Mexico, former congressman of the 2nd Congressional District of New Mexico, Steve Pierce. I will have a segment with Steve Pierce later in the program, but today we'll be talking about the state legislature and gun rights. With me in the studio is Zachary Fort from New Mexico Shooting Sports Association. Zach, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me on.
Tell us a little bit about the New Mexico Shooting Sports Association and what that is and how it works.
So New Mexico Shooting Sports Association, or NMSSA as I like to call it, we've been around in New Mexico since 1935, advocating for New Mexican Second Amendment rights. We are the state affiliate of the National Rifle Association, but we are truly a New Mexico organization by New Mexicans for New Mexicans. We have a board of everyone located here in the state of New Mexico. We're a group of people who live across the state from Farmington down to Hobbs. The purpose of our organization right now is to advocate for New Mexican Second Amendment and rights under the state constitution as well, to right to keep and bear arms. It's Section 2, Article 6 under the state constitution. Because we as New Mexicans, we strongly believe that these are our rights and we need to take responsibility for them and not just sit back and wait for some national organization such as the NRA to get involved. Because it's also, when you go to testify and stuff in Santa Fe, it's a lot more impactful and meaningful when you have a bunch of New Mexicans testifying for our rights, because a lot of times gun rights gets attacked. Oh, you're just this out-of-state special interest group, mm-hmm. or you don't represent people here. It's like, no, we live here. We lived here our entire lives. We plan to continue to live here, and we want to live here as free people.
I want to go through some of these bills that they're working through our state legislation this year. And the first one that comes to mind that concerned me was SB 5, which makes 100 feet of all polling places and 50 feet within the voting drop box gun-free zones under penalty. Now, if I have a carry permit, mm-hmm. once I have the permit, I've gone through the classes, I've done everything. Isn't that the whole state?
Almost the entire state. There's a couple exceptions, things like courthouses, airports, et cetera, and schools where you can't carry even with a concealed carry permit. However, what they're trying to do with this is turn every polling place, you know, if you have a polling place inside a strip mall or something mm-hmm. like that, the polling place into a gun-free zone and also a barrier around it of 100 feet into a quote-unquote gun-free zone. So if you were, you know, next door or something like you're going to a pet store next door to a polling place or something like that, that would also be included within these gun-free zones that they're trying to create. So listening to the testimony of the sponsor of this bill, he has not cited any cases of people trying to intimidate someone else with a firearm. He just said, people at polling place, my constituents, you know, he's from up in Santa Fe. Mm-hmm. It's a very progressive area up there. He just said, my constituents don't like people having guns at polling places. So therefore, we are going to restrict your right. Because we have a right to vote. That is a sacred right we have as Americans. We need to defend that right to vote. We also have a right to keep and bear arms. Our right to keep and bear arms is an equal to our right to vote. There are, as Justice Clarence Thomas said in his decision in Bruin on the Second Amendment, the Second Amendment is not a second class right. So we have a right to bear arms and we have a right to vote. We do not believe that those things are contradictory to one another. A lot of people conceal carry to polling places and most people would never guess you have a firearm walking in the door.
Yeah, when you're concealed.
It's concealed. Sometimes people open carry if that is their preferred method of carrying. And you know what? They could not cite a single instance of someone actually using a firearm to attempt to intimidate someone, because there's already a lot of rules around brandishing a firearm at someone, interfering with voting. There's already a lot of laws around there. This is not to address any type of public safety concern. It's just that these people are scared of firearms. That's really what it boils down to. I mean, a firearm is fundamentally, it's plastic, metal, and wood, some combination thereof. It's mm-hmm. not a magical object. It's not a spiritual object. It's just an inanimate object. It's metal, plastic, and wood, depending on the model of the firearm. Yeah. And the only way it can do something wrong is if somebody acts upon that object, same way as a hammer. A hammer is what? Metal and wood. Someone has to act upon that object to do something bad with it. This is the same thing with a firearm. It's just an inanimate object that people have an irrational fear of. And I think what we need to do is, you know, take a step back on this and say, you know what? We need to bring back more firearms education. Because I think if people get over this irrational fear of firearms, they're going to discover, okay, this is something I don't necessarily need to be afraid of. You know, that person is under control of the firearm. I mean, what do we do every single day? We drive in our cars. I understand there are some people with irrational fear of cars, mm-hmm. and for the most, we don't really think about it. Even though all these people around us are armed with an object that could be used as a deadly weapon. How many people are killed in DWIs every year in Mexico?
And that has happened where somebody's plowed through a crowd.
And people use them intentionally. But yet we surround ourselves with people with these weapons every single day. I mean, a car can be used as a weapon. People, there's vehicular homicide. We surround ourselves with people and with weapons every single day. A firearm is no different. We are fighting back very aggressively against this governor in the courts. You know, she issued her public health order, basically trying to nullify the Second Amendment in Bernalillo County. And we very quickly filed suit in federal court to stop that. And we've been winning a whole lot on that so far. We've gotten everything down. The only place that still applies to is playgrounds. We got parks taken out, and now it's just playgrounds. We're continuing to fight there because that's a battle worth fighting.
All right, how about HB 137, the semi-automatic rifle ban?
What they're trying to do now is, you know, Senator Heinrich, he introduced a bill in Washington, D.C. I guess he partnered with Senator, I believe it was Angus King of Maine. So they introduced this bill in Washington, D.C. It went nowhere. It's just dead. I guess they could, you know, they could always revive this stuff again in the future year, but it went nowhere. So what they're trying to do now is he's trying to take that same legislation, push it into Mexico. So basically what this bill would do, it would outlaw the sale or transfer. It doesn't outlaw possession in its current form, but yeah, that's something we're watching very carefully. But it would outlaw the sale or transfer of semi-automatic rifles into Mexico. And I also want to throw in there, it's not just semi-automatic rifles, it's also a lot of semi-automatic handguns would also be caught up in this. These are the most commonly owned firearms in this country. I mean, when you go to the store, what do you find on the walls? Right. Unless you're going to a store that specializes in hunting firearms or something like that. And a lot of stores, you know, they do carry, you know, some pump action shotguns, bolt action rifles. But when you walk into a store, it's mostly semi-automatic rifles, semi-automatic handguns. These are the most commonly owned firearms we have. And under the Heller decision, it talked about arms in common use are protected by the Second Amendment. And when you have the most commonly owned rifles in America are semi-automatic, they're, I think that under the Heller decision, that in my opinion, you know, we'll probably eventually we will see this go up to the Supreme Court eventually, but I believe that semi-automatic rifles are protected under the Second Amendment based on the Heller decision where it talks about arms in common use. So that test under the Heller decision, there's some other tests, you know, under different decisions, but under the Heller decision specifically, it talks about arms in common use. Representative Romero, she's possibly the most progressive state representative out there, and she's from a very blue liberal district up in Santa Fe, and she claims her constituents want this stuff. You know, a lot of her constituents reach out to us and say, you know, we absolutely do not want this stuff. Representative Romero has refused to meet with us despite repeated requests, and she continues to push this garbage. She actually introduced last year a bill that would ban possession, meaning you would have to surrender your firearms to the state. I don't know why it's not under this year, but that's something we have to look at, because she really said, I mean, because we actually kind of went back and forth on Twitter, which I guess is now called X, on this, and she was dead serious that people were going to have to turn in their guns under her bill. That's really their intention here. You know, he's not in New Mexico, but your neighbors to the east in Texas, you know, when Beto O'Rourke said in debate that we are going to take your guns, he didn't say that to boos or people just being shocked. He said that to applause. That's the thing that hit me. It wasn't that he said it. I mean, we've always known this right. was their goal, but he said it to applause. And that means that the party line of what a lot of the progressives want to do is remove your firearms from your home. People loved it when he said that on the progressive side.
Those people did.
The progressives loved it when he said that. So that is ultimately their intent, is to remove your firearms from your home. Because as the governor herself has said numerous times, she thinks that guns are the problem. It's not the people acting upon the firearms. It's just guns themselves. And she has said that very blatantly. She just says, we have too many guns. It is her ultimate goal to remove your firearms from your home. I mean, that's pretty clear through everything they've done. She's hesitant to come out and say it because that bill would die. But in 10 years, after a whole bunch of chipping away, that is their ultimate goal.
I want to ask you one more. SB 127, raising the minimum age to 21.
Yeah, I mean, basically adults age, you know, 18 through 20 would not be able to go buy these firearms. I think it's ridiculous. It's insulting the rights of these people. Colorado passed a similar law, and the 10th Circuit actually put an injunction against that. So I think there's a question of if that law passed, would they even be able to enforce it? Because there is an injunction against a similar law in Colorado in the 10th Circuit, which we are a part of. People are adults at 18. We strongly believe that, and they should be able to defend themselves with a firearm. There has been a ban on people under the age of 21 purchasing a handgun from a federal firearms licensee. However, I think that's something that we're looking at. A lot of courts are looking at very closely and say, you know, we probably shouldn't do that. And we need to allow people who are 18, you have your right to own a firearm. You need to be able to do that. So we strongly oppose that bill, and we're going to keep fighting against that one as well. It is ridiculous to think that, you know, somebody can die serving their country, but they can't defend themselves at home.
All right. We're talking with Zachary Fort, and he is with the New Mexico Shooting Sports Association. And if folks are interested in what you're doing, well, maybe want to get involved, I'm sure you probably need some money to help help with these lawsuits? How would they do that?
So that is a great question. So the best way right now, you can go to nmssa.org, nmssa.org, sign up for our free email alerts. That's totally free because we just want everyone in our state to know what's going on in Santa Fe. We get out those alerts really, really quickly. You can also find us on Facebook, X, and Instagram as New Mexico Shooting Sports Association or NM Shooting Sports Association. And also on our website, you know, you can buy raffle tickets. You can buy a t-shirt to support us. We're putting on a rally in Santa Fe on February 3rd. There's going to be a ton of people there standing up for our rights, protesting the governor. It's going to be a really good time. I'm personally looking forward to it. It's always great to get a ton of freedom-minded individuals together there. So please support us and get involved. Even if you don't donate a dollar to us, get involved. That's my real message to people.
All right, Zach, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Coming up next, I'll be talking with Anise Golden-Morper. She is the Director of Women's Programs for the New Mexico Shooting Sports Association. Hope you'll stay with me on Inside New Mexico.
Attention, New Mexico veterans. If you were honorably discharged from the U.S. Armed Forces, you've earned state and federal benefits, and the New Mexico Department of Veteran Services is standing by to assist you. State benefits include a veteran's property tax exemption, education and training, and transportation services. We can also assist with claims for federal VA benefits. The state of New Mexico and this radio station thank you for your service. More information at nmveterans.org or 1-866-433-8387.
Welcome back to Inside New Mexico. We have Anise Golden-Morper in the studio with us today. She is the director of the women's programs at the New Mexico Shooting Sports Association. Thanks for being with us today.
Thank you for having me.
So let's talk a little bit about this association and what you do.
Well, this is relatively a new position, and what I want to do is I want to bring women into the club or into the group so they can become more familiar with and comfortable with firearms.
I know more and more women with the crime situation we have these days are concerned about these things. We have a gun store out in Grants, New Mexico that actually sells a pink pistol.
Yes.
Assuming that women would want a pink pistol.
Yes.
I don't know that they do, but there's one available. Oh, I'm sure other gun stores have them too. I just saw it there.
They do, yeah. Yes.
So first off, as I said, more and more women are starting to carry guns. Should women carry a gun?
No one should carry a gun or a firearm unless they have had the training and they're comfortable with the responsibility. But training is everywhere. I do believe that it is the responsibility of every woman to have the confidence to feel empowered and to be ready to defend themselves if their life is being threatened or if their loved one's life is being threatened. So I think that's valuable.
And with that training comes what situation you should or shouldn't use your pistol or your weapon.
Exactly. Right. Exactly. And also alternative ways to get out of the situation you're in. It's great training for anyone.
You're a little person.
Petite, yes.
But it doesn't matter, right?
Well, I'm under 5 foot tall.
Right.
But
you can pull a trigger.
I can definitely pull a trigger. I have since I was very, very young. So pulling the trigger is not a concern. What we need to do is we need to be sure that people understand the mechanisms of a firearm and start to feel comfortable with them. I'm a mom, and I was a single mom for 16 years, and I felt like it was my responsibility to not only protect my 3 children, but also to teach them how to protect themselves. The skill has been passed down to me, to my children, to my grandchildren, and honestly, I travel confidently around our state and other states. I feel safe knowing that not only can I protect my life, but I can protect the lives of others should a situation arise. Now, I don't seek out trouble. I don't go looking for it, but I'm prepared if it happens, yeah. If it shows up.
Being petite, I would guess criminals are generally cowards. They go after an easy target. So if they see someone who's smaller than them, then rather than larger, they're more likely to go after them. Is being a victim the same for men and women?
No, it isn't. Bad guys are usually bigger, stronger, more aggressive, and they look for weaker prey. Women are 11 times more likely to be attacked. Crime is an unfortunate reality, and it is greatly increased in our state. Sometimes you may not be able to avoid unsafe situations because the bad area isn't just in the bad areas anymore. It's everywhere in town. And I grew up in the Albuquerque area. I was born here in Albuquerque. But I know women in Albuquerque and Las Cruces and in other towns that are scared to death to go outside of their house. They're afraid. And they don't even go grocery shopping until their husbands come home, and then they go out on the weekend. But they have good reason to be afraid, because violent crime offenses by population is much higher in New Mexico than it is the average across the United States.
It seems on average that women tend to be more afraid of firearms than men. Have you found that?
I think they're unfamiliar with it.
Is that why?
I think that's part of it, being unfamiliar. And the way you have to overcome that fear is you need to take advantage of the opportunities that there are for training. And training's all over the state. Mm-hmm. It's all over in the city. But with the proper training and practice, women should not only become more confident and self-reliant, but their confidence will continue to grow as they progress, as they get used to the firearm, as they realize that it does not go off by itself. There is a trigger, and that's called a trigger for a reason.
Yes.
As you go through this training, you also become a little bit more familiar with situational awareness, and you learn to look at different patterns of people's behavior. And if it's time for you to get away from a situation, that's much better. Just get away from it. But if you can't, how are you going to defend yourself? How are you going to protect yourself? How are you going to protect your children?
What else can women and men do to become aware of their situation?
You can take several different courses. You can become a member of NMSSA.org. You can go to Cabela's or any of the other firearm stores and get some information. There's a gal who does training for women, and her name is Jody Newton. She has the SavvyShooter.com. That's her website, thesavvyshooter.com. And she does training for the women. Her phone number is 505-239-9494. Also, another thing that can help you to become aware of what's going on is Bernalillo County offers a 6-week Citizens Academy. And the next one is coming up in March, and it's at the Bernalillo County Sheriff's Office at the Regional Training Center. So you can go to burnco.gov to sign up for that. So that's another way that you can become a little bit more aware of your surroundings and what's going on in your area. I do want to mention that some women may be afraid, and they may be concerned about how to defend themselves, how to protect themselves. They may be concerned about a firearm. However, on the other hand, quite a few women have stepped up, and they're tired of being afraid. They're tired of being pushed down or having to stay at home the whole time. Gun ownership in women has drastically gone up, more than double in the past 10 years. And women are enjoying classes, the camaraderie, the shooting sports, the competitions. Women are good at shooting. So, you know, guys, beware. We're pretty hot on that stuff.
Well, and it's the great equalizer, as they say. You know, it makes you have as much power as a 6'5", 250-pound man.
Well, can you imagine me being under 5 foot tall and somebody coming after me that is even over 5 foot, but say 6 feet? Mm-hmm. What do I do? How do I defend myself? You're right. It is the great equalizer. And these classes teach you when it is the appropriate time to protect yourself and when or how to get away when you can.
Because you don't want to shoot somebody by accident.
You don't want to shoot anybody by accident. There's other things that injure people. Vehicles, for one,
sure.
One thing. So there is reckless driving. There's drunk driving. And nobody seems to talk about the fact that the weapon is the vehicle. Yet women drive vehicles.
Yes. Well, but I'm just saying, sometimes, say you'll come out of a store and there'll be somebody standing out there that you might be a little bit afraid of, but you don't just pull out your weapon. You walk to your car and wait for them. If they do something, then you have to decide. And they teach you that.
Right. And the alternative is there a security guard or a manager around? So there is other alternatives that you can take. But being aware is huge. Like you mentioned, if you see somebody, you can't be on your phone, you know, looking down. But it is very important that you become more aware.
And I am talking with Anise Golden-Morper, the director of the women's programs at the New Mexico Shooting Sports Association. If folks want to get a hold of you, how do they do that?
505-228-7884.
All right, Anise, thank you.
Thank you.
In just a moment, we'll hear comments from State Representative Ryan Lane at the legislative reception on Inside New Mexico.
National Guard and Reserve members are true leaders, both in the military and in the workplace. They are highly skilled and get the job done every day. Employer support of the Guard and Reserve, ESGR, can help you recruit top-notch service members to your workforce. Hiring Guard and Reserve members is good for your business and good for your community. Visit esgr.mil/employers to learn more.
Thank thanks for staying with me on Inside New Mexico. State Representative Ryan Lane is from Aztec, New Mexico. He is the House Minority Leader. He had some great comments at last week's legislative reception. I want to play those for you now.
I want to talk about a little bit about history and then finish with a little bit about future, because the reason why I want to touch on history, particularly of the Republican Party, is I feel like there's this narrative in our society right now, and really it's permeated for the last several years, that the Republican Party is something that we should be embarrassed about. That being a member of the Republican Party is something that we should not bolster about. And I think if we remember our history, there's good reason to be proud to be members of the Republican Party. So I want to share with you a few facts about the history of the Republican Party that maybe you know, maybe you don't. Which party abolished slavery? It was the Republican Party. What about the passage of the 13th Amendment, which freed the slave? Again, the Republican Party. What about the 14th Amendment, which gave black citizenship? Again, the Republican Party. The 15th Amendment, which gave blacks the right to vote. Stonewalled by Democrats, but passed by Republicans. How about the first black congressperson and first black senator? They were Republicans. In fact, every black representative in the House until 1935 was a Republican. And every black senator until 1979 was a Republican. How about the first female member of Congress? Republican. The first Hispanic governor and senator belonged to which party? Republican. You guys are catching on. First Asian senator? Republican. How about the 19th Amendment that gave women the right to vote? If you study that history, championed and passed by Republicans. How about Republican President Dwight Eisenhower, who sent the 101st Airborne Division to escort black students into Little Rock, Central High, when Arkansas governor, who was a Democrat, refused to obey a court order to integrate schools. That was led by a Republican. The Civil Rights Act of 1964 was filibustered by Democrats, but was ultimately passed thanks to Republicans. And so I share these few facts with you because I really think that we need to remember our history. We have nothing to be ashamed of. We are the party of freedom. We are the party of liberty. And for those reasons, I think it's important, and I am proud to be up here as the Republican House Leader, because I believe that stands for something. That's the past. How about the future? Well, let me tell you a little story about an Aztec kid, a small town Aztec kid who has a man bun and has hippie tendencies and doesn't look like a Republican or a conservative. But I can promise you I truly am. You see, I grew up in a single-parent household without much money at all. And we were on food stamps, I've been on Medicaid, we lived in low-rent government housing. And even in my early adult life, there were times where I had to make a decision between putting fuel in my vehicle or paying the electric bill. I grew up in an apolitical family. My mom voted, but we never talked politics at the dining room table. We didn't watch Fox News or MSNBC or any of that stuff. So no one really instilled conservative principles into me as a child or as a youth. But I began to observe that government programs, albeit well-intentioned at times, were nothing but Band-Aids. They were incapable of teaching a man to fish. Instead, they're designed to only give you a fish. And I began to notice other things as well. That a solid education can open many doors, no matter your background. That business people, entrepreneurs in particular, are experts at creating financial freedom. That commerce works best when there's little government interference as possible. That the oil and gas industry provided many reliable and good-paying jobs to my friends and family members in the San Juan Basin, many of whom had very little formal education. That life is so incredibly unique and valuable that it's worth protecting. That the Constitution created an incredible structure of government that has resulted in America being the most prosperous and innovative nation in the history of the world. That the number of people living in abject poverty has plummeted as free market systems have been adopted across the globe. And as I reflected on my observations of the world and what these principles lead to, and they lead to the greatest opportunity for those who were born without a silver spoon in their hand, and I realized each and every one of these principles, these are conservative principles. and that these are the principles that define the Republican Party. And these are the principles that will continue in the future to define the Republican Party. And so what does the future of the Republican Party look like? For me, it's one where we fight and advance principles that give every single American the opportunity to succeed. My life is living proof that these principles are not mere lip service. My wife and I have worked hard, we've saved, we've taken calculated risks at times, but conservative principles genuinely have the ability to lift people out of poverty and further personal liberty in real and practical ways. And that's the message I want to leave with you this evening. In a world that looks to beat you down at every turn, that tells us we should be embarrassed about being Republicans, our history is a proud and rich history, and conservative principles give our future nation the best opportunity to succeed, regardless of the zip code that you were born into. And conservative principles are the Republican Party. And for that reason, we should be incredibly proud and incredibly motivated. Thank you.
I think Ryan Lane did a great job there of pointing out Republican values. And I think, Steve Pierce, you'll agree.
Remember that if you want lower crime, if you want better education, if you want the prospect of jobs or a career, you're going to have to vote Republican, because they're the ones who will fight back the special interest. They will fight back the corruption and fight for the everyday people who just want to live a good, a noble, clean life, send their kids to school, attend church on Sundays, and be responsible for themselves. That's the Republican way. The Democrat way is big government, big unions, and total control of your life.
Steve Pierce, the chairman of the Republican Party of New Mexico. If you've been listening and would like to find out more about the Republican Party of New Mexico, there's several ways to do that. One is check out the website at newmexico.gop. The party has a Facebook page. They also have an X account. The handle is at newmexicogop. If you would like to speak to someone in person, you may call party headquarters in Albuquerque at 505-298-3662. That's 505-298-3662. We thank all the local radio stations around New Mexico for broadcasting this program to their communities. For Steve Pierce, I'm Derek Underhill, and we look forward to meeting with you again at this time next week on Inside New Mexico.